The brain needs meat, and other such nonsense.
We have all heard about the vegan alternative for beef burgers, but what about a vegan alternative for octopus tentacles?
Animal Rising on the news again, but this time the Grand National will not seek an injunction against their protests.
An RSPCA assured scheme have paused the rollout of new welfare standards.
Well, that's definitely enough of the falafel. I am Dominic.
I'm Anthony.
I'm Carlos, and this is episode 51 of Vegan Week. Right, welcome everybody to the show.
Indeed, and welcome all first-time listeners, as well as everyone coming back. If this is your first time listening to Vegan Week, this is the show where we cover all the news. We've got other shows that we do in this series, but this is the one where we get all serious and discussy about the latest issues in veganism and animal rights.
Yeah, serious and discussy is good.
I've invented a new adjective there.
Yeah, well, I am a poet, aren't I? It's what I like to do, And one of the reasons we're able to do that is thanks to our lovely sponsors. Fire and Flow Coffee is a 100% vegan specialty coffee and tea retailer. If you check them out on www.fireandflowcoffee.co.uk, Fire and Flow Coffee is all one word. Now, our listeners will get 10% off if they enter falafel10, that's falafel10, at the checkout.
Right, that's enough of the falafel. Let's hear what's been going on in this week's news.
So we have got a lot of news to go through, and we're going to chat about each news article that's caught our eye quite briefly, and then we've each chosen something we're going to talk about in a little bit more detail.
Absolutely. We're going to start off, as always, with news that is affecting animals right now. This one from Farming UK, horrible story. 1,000 pigs or more have been killed in a fire in the last week at a farmyard building in County Tyrone in Northern Ireland. The impacted farrowing house included 80 sows and 1,000 piglets. Really horrid stuff. Still not known how the fire started. It's believed not to be deliberate, but obviously that makes no difference to the poor pigs who've perished there. Really sad start to the show. From Vegan Food and Living, we've got more positive news. A bill to ban octopus farming in Washington State, USA, has been passed by the Senate. We've had lots of negative news about octopus farming in the last 6 months or so, but this sounds more positive. The bill, which is awaiting approval from the state governor, has been described as the first law of its kind by animal advocates. And it passed in the Washington State Senate with a vote of 29 in favour. 20 senators, interestingly, sat in opposition. Would be interesting to hear quite why they opposed it. But it doesn't matter because they were beaten. So good news there. Really, really worrying news from one of our favourite websites, theanimalreader.com this week. They reported that every major heat record was broken last year, 2023. And they say that 2024 could be even worse, according to the World Meteorological Organization. The UN Weather Agency said in its State of the Global Climate 2023 report that average temperatures hit the highest level in 174 years of record keeping, reaching almost 1.5 degrees C above pre-industrial levels. And that included ocean temperatures, which also reached the warmest in 65 years of data. Obviously, that's going to affect animals. There's nothing directly mentioning animals in the story, but of course, it will have a negative impact. Also from the Animal Reader, and also not particularly good news, the H5N1 bird flu virus. It arrived in South America a couple of years ago, 2022. It has been spreading rapidly amongst wild birds and marine animals. The Pan American Health Organization, they've gathered health experts to discuss the outbreak. They're planning to establish a regional commission to oversee bird flu monitoring and response efforts. Obviously, the virus was previously known only to affect birds, but it is now being transmitted between mammals, killing dolphins, seals, sea lions, and birds across the continent. So really sad news there. And finally, this one comes from Farming UK. a frustrating one, and it's going to be my pick to discuss later. The RSPCA Assured Scheme have paused the rollout of their new welfare standards for laying hens for nearly 3 months in response to concerns raised by farmers. So the news was announced on the 15th of March. It means that farmers can continue to use the current version of the standards, which were published 7 years ago, 2017. They can do that until August of this year. Egg producers had raised concerns over implementing these new tougher welfare standards. And just a final comment from me, really. The whole article mentions nothing to do with animals at all. It's all about making sure farmers are looked after, which is really sad.
Thank you, Ant. So my first story I'm going to share is from the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail, known for their left-leaning, liberal, vegan-supporting views. So they're joyfully reporting about Harvard-trained nutritionalist and metabolic psychiatrist called Dr. Georgia Ead, who's publicly declared that the brain needs meat. So she's been on Seattle's Morning News saying that giving up meat can be detrimental for mental health. I've got lots to say about that, so I look forward to us talking a bit more about that later. The UK pet food company Meatly has unveiled the world's first cans of cat food made with cultivated chicken. So chicken pate that blends Omni's plant, yeast and algae proteins with Meatly's cruelty-free meat grown from chicken egg cells. Pets at Home are going to be the first retailer to sell Omni Feast Chicken Revolution. And it's going to be about £1 for a tin.
Would you try that, Dominic, if you were given a little sample?
Would I eat cat food?
Yeah, it's vegan, mate. It's fine.
That is an argument. There was an old Disney movie where a guy was hiding a dog and some people found him. Are you keeping the dog? And he was like, no, but you're holding dog food. And he ate dog food. He liked eating dog food. And it scarred me as a child. Probably turned me vegan, that movie. So speaking of vegan food, I mentioned right at the top of the show, the Kraken. What is the Kraken? Well, there is a Vienna-based plant food company who are launching the world's first vegan octopus tentacles to eat. So it's made from micro protein. It's stuff that can be grilled, fried or baked and add to, like, you know, traditional dishes where real octopus would be used. I've got lots to say about that as well. I will add that they're high in omega-3 and fiber, so if people are thinking, oh, I'm desperate to replace the octopus in my life, I've been really missing since going vegan, the one thing I'm craving is some octopus. Good news for you. Good news indeed. And my final bit of news that I'm going to share is the Spanish food tech company Poseidona. They've raised €1.1 million in a proceed funding round to use algae side streams and invasive seaweeds to create cost-effective proteins with significantly lower water use, land use and carbon emissions than animal-based or conventional plant-based proteins. So that's from the Veg Communist. And now over to Carlos. Carlos, what have you got in the news for us?
Well, I'm going to bring us back to the UK. News from BBC that students in Newcastle have agreed to move towards 100% plant-based catering. So this is the Newcastle University's Student Council. They voted to ensure that 50% of food will be plant-based at their ticketed events, and this will increase to 100% where it's possible, which in my opinion should be always possible, especially if people really want their octopus. part of the, I don't know how popular it is in Newcastle, I've never been, I'll just assume. Part of the plant-based university campaign, 10 other student unions are passing similar proposals. And I believe this is part of an actual bigger movement to kind of turn universities in the UK plant-based. Mm-hmm. Then this piece of news coming in from The Guardian, but also reported elsewhere, about the Jockey Club has decided not to apply for an injunction to deter possible incursions on the Aintree track by animal rights activists at next month's Grand National meeting. So these were mostly by Animal Rising last year, which included an attempt by protesters to scale a perimeter fence, glue themselves to one of the track's obstacles, and that kind of that whole thing kind of caused the race to be delayed by 15 minutes last year. A total of 118 activists were arrested last year, either before or after last year's race or around that event. But even so, the Jockey Club has decided to take no action. Their words are, "We have received no such threats to the Grand National at Aintree next month. And while we continue to work with Merseyside Police and our own teams on robust security plans, we have taken the decision not to apply for an injunction." This is the piece of news I'll be covering in a bit more detail later. Meanwhile, in Mexico, animalequality.org.uk, they report that the Mexico's Chamber of Deputies unanimously approved the nation's first adequate and sustainable food law, supporting the country's transition towards plant-based foods. They had 420 votes in favor, none of them against. And this achievement stems from Animal Equalities, which is a UK-based campaign group, three-year collaboration with Food Alliance and Climate Action, all of whom worked together with Senator Nancy de la Sierra Aramburo to propose this bill. And now Mexico will now promote a dietary model that prioritizes the consumption of plant-based foods while significantly reducing the consumption of animal products. I'll say I tried to look up this piece of news to see what this actually meant in actual terms about this promotion, and I couldn't find much, but I expect us to be hearing a lot more about this in the coming months as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to promote and another thing to actually put laws in place that kind of deter people from eating.
Yeah, it's all about the follow through, that one, isn't it? It's very easy to do a vote. I mean, amazing that every single person voted in favor. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
When you've got Washington State split almost 50-50 on, shall we farm octopuses or not? And then like the whole Mexican yes. chamber has said, yeah, plant-based food, let's go for it.
Well, we'll see how that turns out in its actual application. Meanwhile, farminguk.com reports that animal welfare campaigners have launched legal action against the European Commission for its failure to deliver its cage-free farming ban pledge. So in 2021, the European Commission pledged to introduce proposals for a EU ban on caged farming before the end of 2023. Of course, it's 24 now, and this hasn't happened. So the Citizens Committee of the End the Cage Age European Cities Initiative said the EU had failed to act on its promise to introduce legislation to ban cages. So papers have been filed at the Court of Justice in Luxembourg outlining the committee's case, with the legal action being funded by Compassion in World Farming, which is another welfarist group in this case.
Thank you, Carlos. Thank you. Any listeners who'd like to read more on each story, you can follow the links that are in the show notes. We're not going to talk about each and every one of them in huge detail, or else it would be a 900-year-long podcast, which would be joyful for us, but will take some commitment. But we are each going to pick out one story in addition to the main story for this week. So I think I'm going to ask Ant, what is the pick of Ant?
Following that really positive sounding story from Mexico, where we've got unanimous votes for, you know, let's nudge things towards plant-based eating, I was just really, really gutted to see the RSPCA assured scheme just saying, oh, we've got these welfare standards, you know, we're supposed to be working towards them, but actually, no, we're not going to move forward with it. We're going to pause it. We're going to give people another 3 to 6 months, it looks like, basically because egg producers, i.e. animal farmers, are saying, oh gosh, that seems a bit tough. That seems a bit soon for us to be doing things like that. And whilst I really understand like the practical difficulties of running any business and working to timescales and things like that, like the whole point of the RSPCA is animal welfare. Now, as vegans, we can agree or disagree with, you know, whether they should be pushing a welfarist agenda or whatever, but you know, that's what they're there for. Surely the whole point is for animals' outcomes to be positive here, and they're letting people off the hook, basically saying, oh, you know, you don't need to install these verandas just yet. Got another 3 months to have different amounts of daylight and things like this going in. That I won't go into all the details if it's sort of quite quite technical and mundane, I think, really, to look through it. And the main feeling I get when I look through these very small incremental improvements is, my God, are we really not even at the stage where all chickens that we're exploiting don't even have access to these things across the board yet? I think it is a story that's worth highlighting, because it just shows where the focus is, like we needed a reminder, where the focus is in animal farming. And it's not animals, it's at all. It's how can we get a product that we can profit from for the very minimum outlay? But I don't know if either of you had a sort of response to that, or kind of whether it made you similarly angry, or are you at this stage just kind of ambivalent to the RSPCA, not surprised by this sort of thing?
I can't imagine what it must be like to work for a group like the RSPCA, where you're pushing for such things. In my layperson's view, it does seem rather lenient. A big thing for me personally on my journey towards veganism was when, as a child, I moved from the city out to the countryside, and the animal farmers which I met, the animal farmers around me when I was a boy, the animal welfare was not a concern. It was like speaking another language. It was just a completely not a factor to consider, and it horrified me as a child. It really, really upset me, and it took me a long time to kind of think how these individuals who I met, how they'd been on a journey where they just become numb to it. I am aware of one man where I grew up who did, you know, he was working in a job, a really, really awful job, and left it because of how much it had affected him, because it was a choice of either, like, you know, numbing yourself or not doing the job. In his head, that's what it was. So if we take the experience of the people I met and presume that maybe that's not uncommon, then you really do need these external agencies to be at least pushing for the animal welfare argument. And it doesn't seem like the argument's being pushed as strong as it could be from my perspective.
I know that animal welfare and scientific developments are not the same thing. They're not the same field. But don't you think it was really telling, in the middle of a global pandemic, how quickly a vaccination was developed? You know, when everyone decides something's really important, we can actually make things go really quickly. And here we've got something that's clearly not valued by society very much, maybe just to pay lip service to it. And so, you know, we're saying, oh yeah, well, we'll make sure all of these chickens have natural daylight by the 1st of January 2031. It's like, what? We can't do it sooner than that. We really can't do it any sooner than that. Are you kidding me? Makes me feel very misanthropic.
I have a big reservation towards the RSPCA. And I think, broadly speaking, it does more harm than good. Just based on the fact that it deflects, let's say, the general public's outrage towards animal welfare issues. They just think, oh, I'll just make a donation to the RSPCA and that's it. I've done enough for animal welfare. And I just wish they weren't such a big organization and kind of collected so much goodwill from people and the general public. It's not even about being a welfareist organization. I think they're, what's it called, RSPCA Assured Farm Program. It has a name like that. It's pretty dreadful. I mean, that's not even being welfareist, in my opinion. That's just trying to capture the goodwill of the people who actually want a lot more than what the RSPCA is offering them. Good stuff with the dogs. Thank you very much for the dogs, you know, rescuing dogs in trouble. But please stay out of all the other vegan and animal rights issues.
Yes.
Just stick to that one, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe RSPCD from now on.
I mean, you say that jokingly, but yeah, it's this common thing, isn't it, when, like, so many people are, I love animals, and what they mean is I love pets. And I think you're really right, Carlos, that the RSPCA reflects that. And I was talking about the numbness that certain people working in the animal industry, in my experience, have felt. And I don't think that's discommon in the general public, that people are just like, yeah, chickens are fine, cows are fine, pigs are fine, oh, the kittens, oh, the dogs, you know. And, you know, you hear outrage over stuff that's happened to kittens, dogs. It's like, yeah, definitely. But also, how about this? So, yeah, I think you're right, Carlos. The RSPCA
I think all my definition of vegan, and I think everybody's definition of vegan, is that vegans are not non-speciesist. Mm. So we consider all animals to be of equal value. And any organization that doesn't consider all animals to be of equal value is not a vegan organization. Mm. That's kind of just, if you ever need to think about these things, I think that's like a good way to just kind of generalize and go, is this a vegan organization? No, because they, you know, they consider some animals to be worth more than others, mm. or some animals to be worthy of consideration and others definitely not. Mm. And because the RSPCA kind of fails at that very basic step, then they're not one of us, so to speak.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I'm disappointed, but also I didn't have a lot of expectations.
Yeah. Well, I'm holding out that maybe hens in animal agriculture might get access to natural daylight sooner than 7 years' time. Here's to hoping. Carlos, what is your pick of the news from this week's stories? Which did you want to go into?
It's a bit seasonal, related to the Grand National happening next month in Aintree, and the fact that the Jockey Club is not seeking that injunction. This is something that I've been kind of studying and putting some time into looking recently, because there have been quite a lot of cases that have been brought to court against animal rights activists, mostly related to freeing animals from farms and you know, what are called commonly rescues. And you know, things get to court. And if it actually goes, you know, not just a deal is struck, but actually goes into court with, you know, jurors and media coverage and all that stuff, most often the prosecution drops the case. If it's like a private company or organization, they drop the case. And I think this is, again, an example of an organization dropping the case when things actually get more serious or with more visibility, because they know they're wrong. Mm. And they know the public would not like to hear certain things. So these organizations just kind of try to drop and try to cover, you know, try to not make a big deal out of it, because raising the injunction and then the prosecutions and then all that. I mean, I'm sure Animal Rising will do something. Not that I have any insider knowledge, mm. or do I? And but they, you know, they're going to do something. And the more this is just covered by the press in a way that it appears like nothing has happened, the less likely the general public is going to hear about what an atrocity exhibition this, you know, the Grand National is, and you know that it's something definitely not for animal lovers, using the term you were using before, you know, the famous animal lovers. I love horse racing.
Yeah. Yes,
strange way to love something.
Oh, it's just awful, isn't it? Like I'm very fortunate that I'm self-employed at the moment, but I've, you know, worked in many an offices before, and I'm sure it's something that a lot of people on their vegan journey can relate to, when you feel like the killjoy, because everyone's like, oh, isn't it great, have a flutter, or like, don't you like horses, you know, and like being the one and thinking, you know, these are people with whom I work, how am I going to balance my integrity and, you know, my desire to be a voice for you know, a perspective not being heard here, for the suffering, for the atrocity, is a really, really difficult one to balance when everyone's so cheerful and so happy, mm. and they've had a really hard day at work and the boss has been mean and like the whole day's been awful, and then they've got this like one little happy thing at the end and the other one going, well, actually.
Yeah.
It's like really difficult, really awful.
But you know, this country banned blood sports 170 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we can put this into blood sports, but you know, but there's probably more animals killed in this than a lot of other things.
Yeah, well, I mean,
a lot of other blood sports. Yeah,
we had Cheltenham Festival just down the road from Mead last week. Two horses died at that. Like, is anyone really reporting that, other than animal rights based organisations? Not really, no.
Yeah.
So it's really important that, you know, fantastic work that Animal Rising and other such organisations do to keep raising the profile. And it's such a shame. It has to be such a long, grinding strategic campaign. It's such a shame we can't press a magic button, but like you say, Carlos, like the fact that, you know, the Jockey Club is kind of having to go about things in quite a tactical way and not following through on prosecutions, it shows that I kind of think I have faith that in the long run we will make a difference, but it's a long old slog.
Yeah, it's the same way with rescues. You know, if you have like a farm with 2,000 battery chickens, and you know, somebody breaks in and rescues five chickens. It's not right. It's great for those five chickens, sure, but what's really important is kind of bringing to light the suffering of the 2,000 that were left behind. And if this gets to court, then that spotlight is shown on those 2,000 chickens that were left behind. It's not about the five that were rescued. So all these actions have a bigger value than the action themselves. You know, so if Animal Rising manages to, you know, like last year, they delayed the race by 15 minutes, those horses still raced in the end. So that's not the important part. The important part is bringing this to the news. And if it goes to court, it's brought to the news more again and again and again, instead of just this one time. So this is why the Jockey Club is being tactical, as you said. So that was my story. Dominic, what was your favorite one?
Oh, thanks, Carlos. Well, ranting about vegan octopus tentacles, where, you know, they're going to have like a really high nutritional score, but these vegan tentacles, it's like the realistic appearance that a lot of work's gone into. They've got suckers, they're slimy, they're going to be made from fungi protein, but yeah, my subjective view is that they look horrible. They look really horrible. And I'm not one of those people who's like, you know, why are you having a sausage? It's not, you know, like a sausage is meat. Of course I'm not of that view. Of course I'm not. Although, if I have a friend over or I'm cooking for someone, I'm someone who really enjoys cooking with pulses and vegetables. And generally, it's not my go-to thing, the mock meat. So, yeah, I don't know what the rest of us think of it. I mean, like, of course, like an addition to the vegan cuisine is a good thing. I remember being a little kid and everyone eating those horrible slimy sweets that were probably full of gelatin, actually, that were like, you know, that's what this looks like.
The sticky ones.
Yeah, the sticky sort of long sort of like, you know, looks like you could, you know, probably choke very easily on it because it's just sludge, just going to ram some sludge down my throat. And I just think, how many people are like, I would love to go vegan, but it's just the octopus. I just can't give up the octopus. I don't know how much demand there is for the Kraken. I don't know. Am I being a grumpy old cynic?
I'm really interested to hear from Carlos as someone who's grown up but with loads of seafood around him.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say that. I mean, I grew up, you know, in the kind of this Atlantic Ocean coast and Mediterranean. Unfortunately, I became a vegetarian and a vegan much later in life. So I did eat a lot of seafood, unfortunately.
Why?
But and you reminding me of when I watched those cooking TV shows like Come Dine With Me and stuff like that. And whenever there's a contestant that's doing something like, oh, I'm going to do fish. And I'm like, don't do the fish. Don't do the fish. Because everybody's going to say, oh, this is too fishy. That's just Brits. Brits are going to say, this is too fishy. This is too weird. I don't like seafood. but anyway, I'm just joking. And I definitely don't like my fake meat to look like actual meat. I like it to look like, I don't know. I don't even miss the taste of you know, octopus. I think it's somewhere in my brain store that taste, and it's not something I'd like to eat. But that one does look creepy, doesn't it? The way they kind of modeled it to look exactly like the real thing. It's just odd.
Yeah.
It's just odd.
Yeah.
Now, if they could do a good vegan crab, though.
Okay. Really? Okay.
Yeah. That might. It doesn't have to look like the real thing, but if they could make something that tastes like real. I mean, I'm sure your listeners will say, of course, but there's this company in the southwest of the United States and you can order it, you know, by all means, you know, just out of curiosity. Yeah, but it doesn't look good, does it?
No, it really doesn't.
It's got the suckers and everything. Oh, you put the suckers in.
I really want to talk to the person that is attracted to that as a proposition. My feeling is that, I mean, I'm the last person to ask really and give an opinion on this really, which is ironic. But like, I would have thought if you are eating real octopus tentacle, like the fact that the tentacles are like so clearly part of the animal, that's kind of a bit of the shtick there. It's like, oh yeah, this is authentic. So then a vegan version is just highlighting the fact that it's really not. But then I used to get so irritated, like running a restaurant and people saying, oh, why do you serve a hot dog? It's not real. What's the point? And I'd just be like, oh, get off your high horse. Like that's not, you know, no one's making anyone eat this. Like we're only serving this because people want it.
It's a very convenient shape to cook things and store things. A cylinder is a very convenient shape, like a burger patty.
Yeah, you know,
like a patty is very convenient to store things.
I thought you meant a tentacle.
No, a tentacle. No, that's not convenient at all.
High surface area. Maybe that's why it's so high in fiber. I mean, when you said, yeah, Dominic, oh, it's high in fiber and omega-3, I was like, so's flaxseed. I think I'm going to put flaxseed on my porridge, not octopus tentacle. But
yeah, I think for me, it's not at all a vegan perspective for me. It's just the kind of like, oh, it looks really slimy. And like, if you gave me like a vegetable that was that kind of, that looked that texture, that looked that shape, but it was clearly a vegetable, you know, I don't think within the vegan diet I'm that much of a fussy eater, but I probably wouldn't want to eat it just because of that, really. But yeah, the shape of it is like out of a horror movie. It's like out of an Edgewood film. But then having said all of that, you know, Carlos, like you've really made me think that of course I was, I mean, you said it very respectfully, Carlos, but I was very much thinking of it as a, from a British perspective. And you know, even as a kid, like seafood wasn't really that big a thing for me in my childhood. And you know, I've never eaten crab, I've never eaten oyster. You know, as a meat eater, you know, we all ate meat until I was like nearly a teenager, and it just wasn't a consideration. So I've got no experience with any of those things. So if you have people with that, then yeah, I retract my earlier comment. Who wants vegan octopus? Actually, yeah, probably loads of people, you know. So yeah, that's
learn
something.
let's just imagine there's somebody out there who actually says yes to your question of, I would have gone vegan except for the bloody octopus. there'll be somebody. I mean, it's like the bleeding burger, isn't it? That was like how the Beyond Burger was marketed in the beginning.
Yeah.
As the bleeding burger. Oh, it's, we actually can have it like with this kind of medium rare, kind of rare.
Yeah.
As opposed to the other bean burgers and things like that, which, you know, you definitely need to kind of cook them properly. This one you can leave roughly rare, and it'll kind of, when you squeeze it with a fork, it bleeds like a real burger. I mean, no vegan would have asked for something like that. No vegetarian would have asked for something like that. Yeah. But maybe for some meat maniacs out there, that was just a thing for them.
Yeah.
Having said that, I don't like it. It looks kind of gross.
Although, Carlos, I don't know. I'm presuming here, but maybe actually some vegans, you know, from the difference between fantasy and reality, you know, like I'm a big video gamer and I love the martial arts games like Tekken, where there's like blood spraying around. And, you know, I don't really want to like kick someone in the head till they bleed. I really don't. That sounds like the kind of thing someone would say if they did want to kick someone in the head till they bleed. But I honestly don't. But the fantasy of it, like, you know, grown up with the martial arts movies and to, you know, imagine that. Maybe there's a comparison, perhaps, between that. And I mean, I don't know why you'd want the fantasy of like eating a tentacle, but you know, no shaming of any, like, you know, sort of desire or what if it's in a fantastical setting, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speciesism is a funny thing, isn't it? When I moved to the UK 18 years ago, I was pretty shocked that people didn't eat horse and rabbit in this country.
Mm-hmm.
That was such a not super common meat, but it was twice or three, four times a month. I'd eat rabbit, for example, or horse. It's just another animal, as far as I was concerned. And I had like no idea of animal rights at the time. So, but the octopus, I think it's just another one like that.
I have a friend who's gone vegan like just in January, and he grew up in a sort of Romani gypsy environment, and they ate rabbits, they hunted rabbits, they illegally got rabbits. And you know, people's reaction to this, like his story of that, you know, again, animal lovers, dog lovers, cat lovers who like, oh, chickens, there's no problem there. You know, they're horrified by like the idea of rabbits. But yeah, you know, when I took my poetry to New Zealand, it was a really working class common thing there to go and just get your food off the land. And it wasn't seen as unusual or you know, bizarre. So yeah. Again, this different category for different animals.
Just to add perhaps a final point on this, I find it quite interesting that this product has been created by an Austrian company, completely landlocked, no octopus within sight. And maybe that's what's like inspiring them. They're like, so what is this octopus thing? I mean, I've never seen one before. Should we try and make one? Yeah, let's make one.
Well, anyway. I think that brings us to our main story that we've got, the story about needing meat for our mental health. From I sarcastically refer to the Daily Mail as our friends, our left-leaning lovers of animal welfare. So, Ant, what's the factual background on this before we get into all of our strong opinions?
Yeah, absolutely. So for context here, this was a quote from Dr. Georgia Ead, who is a Harvard professor and has a book out, which I think is quite important to note context-wise. Very often inflammatory headlines and sound bites are good ways of shifting books from people who agree with you, whether or not you're correct. So she's got a book out called Change Your Diet, Change Your Mind. And she was appearing on a Seattle-based news show and podcast. And I'll just give you a little rundown of some of the things that were said in that. If you follow the link in our show notes, you'll be able to hear the 8-minute segment on it's mynorthwest.com is the site that the original soundbite is on. But she has said the following: we're used to hearing that meat is dangerous for our total health, including our brain health, and that plants are really the best way to nourish and protect our brains. But the truth of the matter is that it's actually upside down and backwards. She has said that so many of the other essential nutrients are much more difficult, if not in some cases impossible, to obtain from plants. She's said that most studies that we hear in headlines that influence our nutritional decisions are more wild guesses than actual scientific experiments. And she gives an example. Her whole premise is that changing the way you eat can change your mind, it can change your mental health and things like that. She gave an example of a scientist and doctor who had bipolar disorder, and he went onto a ketogenic diet, which put his bipolar disorder into full remission simply from that diet, as she put it. The thing that really got my goat is that as well as all of these sound bites that are, I'm assuming, being put forward to promote her book and kind of come up with a hot take on nutrition that will make the headlines, when the Daily Mail reported this, and I don't know if either of you saw this, but if you scrolled right down to the bottom, they had this little pictogram that was sort of saying, here are some risks of following a vegan diet, prime risks. And it listed some of the risks as bone fracture, anemia, stroke, depression, and hair loss. And I can say personally, I didn't have any hair before I was vegan, so it's definitely not because of that. So we've, in a sense, we're reporting on something here that is, I would put it to you that it's not news. It's someone just trying to sell a book, but it's one of those where it's been reported in lots of places, lots of news outlets have kind of paraphrased this. And my feeling is it's really quite dangerous as well as annoying. Dom, what are your immediate thoughts on it?
Well, I don't want to be some sort of, oh, who listens to the experts, you know, because like I'm not a person who's a qualified scientist who spent ages studying. Absolutely, it is correct to identify that there is at best a dual motive. If you want to sell a book, you know, there's at best a dual motive. And like, for fear of being the kind of person I just said I'm not, like every 2 seconds there's like scientific studies going, oh, this gives you cancer. No, it doesn't. It cures cancer. So, you know, it feels a little bit like it discredits the argument for me just to quote like one person. Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, I can quote one person who had a vegan diet and their health really improved and their sort of mental wellness really improved. I can quote far more than one person. Do you know what I mean? There's enough vegan athletes and enough vegan people who have gone for many years and achieved many things to be like, well, this isn't an absolute, is it? And there's the danger of not just the original book, but the way in which these articles in newspapers are being written with the, oh, little, you know, warning signs. This is, you know, no.
What really frustrated me in terms of like the responsibility of news outlets putting it out there is the original like news radio station that had the interview on in the first place. When they reported it on their website, at the top they've got a big headline saying Colleen O'Brien, I assume that's the show, doctor says we need meat for mental health to thrive. That's in big bold letters. When you scroll right to the bottom, the author of the article says, I'm going to be the first to say that I love interviewing smart people about topics around mental health and wellness. I remain a total optimist when it comes to one's ability to better themselves. I also recognize claims of being able to cure oneself of bipolar disorder sound too good to be true. And so they're kind of like discrediting what's been said in the article, but it's like, it's too late. You've put that at the bottom of the page. Like, you're assuming everyone's going to read the article. They're not. Most people are just going to see the headline. So, like, you've either got to be responsible about this or not. And I think putting a big headline that says, we need meat to have good mental health, that can't be countered by putting a little caveat at the bottom saying, well, it did seem a bit too good to be true. Like, the horse is bolted. It's too late.
Yeah. If the Daily Mail got a sniff of something that said, oh, vegan diets linked to improved mental health next week, they would do an article on that, trying to ignore everything they wrote. The important is just get clicks in. And I think for this lady, it might just be important to get, you know, to make these statements and kind of get the thing out of the book. Well, first of all, I'd say that veganism is not a diet. So let's clear that one out already. Mm. But even though it's often portrayed in these kind of websites as a diet, And this article, it mixes veganism with vegetarianism. It mixes, it talks about lack of zinc for no reason. It just says, found that lower levels of zinc were associated with depression, as zinc can reduce inflammation in the brain. But then it says, well, eggs, meat, and cheese have a lot of zinc. Well, lots of other things have lots of zinc. So it's a sort of non-argument. Mm. It looks like they just chucked a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, if you ask a non-vegan if they consume enough B12, they will just look at you.
Yeah.
Whereas if you ask most vegans if they consume B12, they will say, yes, I have it in the cupboard. I take a tablet a day. Yeah. You know, most of our plant-based milks come with B12 added, usually like 100 milliliters, which is like barely anything, like what kind of plant-based milk you would put in a couple of cups of coffee. Those have enough B12 for you as a human being for the day. So it's not really a consideration. It's like vitamin B12, which often in vegans is absent. It's like, okay, present the study, please. And, you know, this is not, some of this stuff is not like a serious article. It's just to pander to an audience that wants to not feel bad about not being a vegan.
Yeah.
I mean, even in the article itself, it talks about a previous article they wrote back in Veganuary, so 2 months ago, on the 7th of January, where it talks about experts reveal what Veganuary does for your body as Brits ditch meat for a whole month. And then it talks about all the benefits of veganism, you know, quoting scientific studies as well and quoting and so on, and you know, all that stuff. So I hope people don't take this kind of stuff seriously and I guess do their own research. It's very easy to be an unhealthy vegan. It's very even easier to be an unhealthy non-vegan. It's not an argument. When I'm talking to non-vegans and trying to get them to become vegans, I usually don't focus on health.
Well, that's what I was going to say, actually. Like, do we think that actually these kind of discussions are actually worth almost crediting with the response, or does our argument for for following a vegan lifestyle need to be along the lines of animal rights. And like, yeah, we've got the kind of caveat that, yes, you, of course, you can live a vegan lifestyle as healthily or if not healthier than someone who's not. But actually, is there an argument that if we give too much time and credit to these kind of non-stories or these kind of arguments that we're undermining the fundamental integrity of animal rights, which is the key thing?
My friend who used to hunt rabbits in the Romany Gypsy family, who's gone vegan, it's mostly been environmentalism that's, you know, climate change that has been the big push for him, as opposed to animal welfare. And yeah, I think that when I'm talking about health, I'm so careful that so many people have so many different health, you know, it's conditions. All our bodies are so different. I do talk from my perspective. My own journey from to meat eater to vegetarian, vegan was really, really slow. I've got so many friends who just went vegan overnight, and that is awesome. That is amazing. I didn't do that. And I just know when I was still eating cheese and then I stopped eating cheese, how good that made me feel. So rather than say veganism can make you healthy, you know, I tend to just say it did make me feel healthy. It does. And, you know, I really agree with everything that Carlos was saying about, you know, how, you know, what are the sources here? I mean, you know, it would be a poor vegan argument. It would be a poor vegan argument if I was like, look at all these unhealthy meat eaters, look at them. But I was only choosing people who went to McDonald's every day, you know. So yeah. Carlos is quite right. Of course we can find people who are eating a diet that is vegan and are unhealthy. Of course we can. It's possible in any walk of life, of course.
And it's not, I don't think it's a very good argument. And I agree with you, Ant, that's perhaps not the kind of focus vegans should debunk. They should just say, yes, you can lead a perfectly happy, healthy life as a vegan. But maybe try to focus on the positives, on the things we actually want to achieve and bring to the world, rather than just debunking. Because ultimately the meat industry and the dairy industries, they're always going to be able to create more spokespeople than we are able to create spokespeople, at least with money. So we just kind of should focus on our own campaigns, in my opinion.
I think as well on the subject of mental health, I mean, if you want a way of guaranteeing that I'm going to become depressed, like, make me stop being vegan, make me consume animal products, because that's, you know, not just talking from a physiological point of view, like what the nutrition is doing, but like mentally not being able to live through those ideals and going against my values in that way, that's going to depress the hell out of me.
I can totally understand why vegans are more depressed than non-vegans. It's because vegans actually are aware of the atrocities that happen in our in society as everyday occurrences, with other people not actually caring about them. That's a good way to be depressed if you're not careful.
That was certainly my early experience of veganism. For me, like, the early days felt really negative because I felt overwhelmed by this sudden eye-opening of the amount of suffering out there. And then, you know, for fear of sounding too preachy, it did become a really joyful thing, because I kind of thought, well, how can I influence change? How can I make good choices? I live in a city, Manchester, where there's tons of cool vegan places to eat out. And there was, you know, again, rather than just going to like the mock meats, there was all loads of sort of vegetables, like, you know, jackfruit and things that I'd never tried before, you know, Jamaican dishes, and it was wonderful. And it became a really exciting thing that did improve my mental health, because I felt a sense of belonging, which I think in the modern age, so many of us struggle to find, that struggle in an increasingly isolated, where people traveling away for work, you know, families splitting up and all. I really feel a positive mental health thing about being part of the vegan family, such as with you guys.
Be enough of the falafel family in your ears 24/7 if you choose. Has anyone else got anything they wanted to add, or are we happy to bring that conversation to an end?
The NHS says it's absolutely fine to have a vegan diet. I'll trust the NHS more than a lot of other sources.
Yes.
And it's so far so good for me. That's all I can say.
Yeah, yeah. Still upright and breathing so far. That's what I normally say to people when they ask how veganism's going for me.
Well, I suggest we bring that conversation to an end. Thank you, gentlemen. What a joy to discuss.
Thank you.
Okay. So if our listeners have any thoughts about our main story or indeed anything we've covered in the show, please, you can send your thoughts to our email, which is enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep the conversation going. Just because we're the voices that you've been hearing today, like, the conversation can include everyone if you want it to. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you, everyone, for listening too. We know that not everyone wants to get in touch and start a dialogue about these things. You just want to listen, and we can see that you're listening, and it's really lovely to see. Lovely to see our community growing, so that's fabulous. If this is one of your first shows, you might not know we've got other shows in the Enough of the Falafel collection. So this is the Vegan Week show. We've also got Vegan Talk, which comes out every Thursday, where we get all philosophical about things. And back in January, we did 10 wonderful episodes in the Going Vegan series. Carlos and Dominic both have full episodes where we just hear about them, as well as 8 other individuals hearing about their vegan transition, which are some of my favourite episodes. So give those a listen if you haven't done already.
Wow, that feels like a long time ago we did that. My goodness, my goodness. But there's more episodes coming up, isn't there? So this Thursday, we'll have the next episode of Vegan Talk, which us three will be back on. And the topic we'll be chatting about is when vegans go looking for trouble.
Anyway, that's enough of the falafel for this episode. I've been Carlos.
I've been Anthony.
And I've been Dominic. And you have been listening to episode 51 of Vegan Week.
This show is kindly sponsored by our friends at Fire and Flow Coffee Roasters. And they're such great people. They're offering all Enough of the Falafel listeners a cheeky 10% off orders on their online store when using the code FALAFEL10. That's Falafel, the number 10. Fire and Flow are a specialty coffee roastery based in the Cotswold with a fully vegan coffee shop on site.
Yeah, they're a vegan founded company too. They're run by 3 friends, Shah, Callum and Phil, and they specialise in roasting and supplying wholesale coffee beans to coffee shops, restaurants, hotels and offices.
For the wholesale part of their operations, they work with other businesses to help them get the most out of their coffee offering, with free barista training and full technical support included.
The products themselves are the result of their passion for working with skilled and ethical-minded farmers who produce the highest quality beans. Fire and Flow then roast them to perfection in small batches at their roastery in Cirencester, which you can visit at any time. Book onto one of their barista courses or roastery tours via their website, fireandflowcoffee.co.uk.
While you're there, you can check out the beautiful, fully vegan coffee shop on site. I've been there myself. It's absolutely brilliant. And it's open 7 days a week from 9 till 3. The last time I went, it was a Sunday afternoon. It was glorious. It's just a fab place to hang out and feel good about life.
Give them a follow on Instagram to get the latest at Fire and Flow Coffee. And for those online orders, remember the code exclusively for our brilliant Enough of the Falafel community. That is Falafel 10. 10 is 1 and 0. So Falafel 10.